Hello, everyone, and welcome to the PPC show brought to you by AdStage. I am Paul Wicker.
And I am Emma Franks.
And today is August 23rd, and these are your top headlines in paid marketing. Well, you might have noticed, first off, that that is not JD's voice on the other end. Emma was happy. Well, I don't know if you're happy about it, but you were nice enough to step in and do headlines since JD could not make it work this week. He insists on doing work over there, Cora, sometimes, and he's got like another podcast now. So we're very happy to have the voice of, I won't call you the voice of Hennepin Marketing, but a voice from Hennepin Marketing, Emma Franks, on the show today. So thank you, Emma.
Thank you, Paul. And I am happy to be here. So you're not lying there.
Nice. Right. And JD doesn't know you're on, so it'll be interesting if he's like, are you going to replace me?
Oh,
that's what I'm going
for. He's
going
to be like, who is this voice pretending to be JD?
Right. I saw the nice things he was saying about you on Twitter, so I think he'll be happy.
Yeah, so it's really his fault that I'm a part of this.
Exactly. That's very true. So we couldn't get the podcast recorded, and then I saw that Emma's doing her MBA. Congrats on, well, I guess not congrats yet, but good luck. You're a third of the way through, you were telling me. And on Twitter, you were talking about some project you had to do. And then I was like, maybe I'll call up Emma and we'll do the show. And here we are, bringing you all the headlines that you care about this week.
Yes. And for our longtime fans, Paul and I actually did a webinar together back in like Q1, I think, where it was suggested that I might make a guest appearance on the PPC show. So for those of you that have been waiting, this is it.
Right. That's right. This was all planned. You're right. We brought it together wonderfully. So the first story we have this week is about Twitter. You probably haven't thought about them much if you're doing PPC these days. I feel like Twitter's just out of the hype cycle lately, if it's not about a crazy tweet from a president. But they did make some changes to video, which is where we've talked about on the show many times, that Twitter has really realized their niche is replacing TV and getting all those TV budgets. So not too surprising, this change, where they rolled out a new video ad buying model where it charges when an advertiser makes it, well, when the viewer makes it to 6 seconds, and at least 50% of their ad is like in view, so on the screen, and it makes it to 6 seconds. And I have to admit, there's like 100 video metrics these days in terms of like duration and on screen. And I know the MRC, which is the Media Rating Council, has tried to come up with some standards. And their standard, really, the MRC standard, is 50% in view for at least 2 seconds. So this is yet another one, but Twitter is trying to reward advertisers who are struggling to get to this new format of like short form video, which works. So I don't know, they're giving you another video option.
I was really surprised by this, honestly, because thinking about social, you know, we talk about it all the time, but 6 seconds is an eternity in a news feed, like especially on Twitter, where it's just like scroll, scroll, scroll. And it's amazing how fast our brains can actually interpret all of the text that we go through in just 1 second. So I think it's going to be really beneficial for them if they can get the word out on this new metric and the option to actually be able to pay per view in that way. I noticed something that you had highlighted earlier. The CFO, there's a quote, he said, more demand is constrained. They're more demand constrained than supply constrained. So they have the users and they have the inventory, but they're really struggling to get the advertisers onto the platform. And I think it goes back to what I know you and JD have talked about previously, of like advertisers just wanting to go to the platforms where they know there's a lot of scale and they know that, you know, okay, we'll be able to reach these millions of people, and Twitter's still trying to get the attention of like, no, we have value, come to us. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because like stories and Instagram stories and Snapchat stories, I feel like, are exploding and marketers are on board. And yet then Twitter's over here trying to say like, hey, remember, we have all this video inventory we can't sell. So, and I, you know, especially if you're selling TV, I think the longer, you know, the 6 second kind of maybe appeals to those folks who are moving from 30 second spots in their mind, and they can't imagine paying for something that only is like a second, because like Twitter has any, if it's been played at all, they have that metric. They have 2 seconds. They have 1 second. They have like all these different options. There's a 3 second. So basically, at this point, you can almost look at any of these like any second you want, and Twitter will create a bid type for you. So it's they just want spend on Twitter, which makes sense.
Yeah.
And then Amazon, so another kind of weird one. I guess we, whenever we don't talk about Google and Facebook privacy issues, I consider it weird on the podcast these days.
Well, foreshadowing.
That's true. So we'll get to these first. Amazon, so, well, Facebook was in the news quite a bit for Libra, their blockchain cryptocurrency that they are attempting to launch to power transactions on the Facebook platform. They were in Congress, you know, telling everybody how you can trust Facebook. They would never make any mistakes, and how it's going to be a third-party org, you know, a .org nonprofit, and they're just going to contribute to it, but they're not going to overly steer the direction of the company. All this stuff that no one seems to believe. And, you know, it seems like Congress is now kind of hell-bent on not letting Facebook launch Libra. Meanwhile, Amazon announced they are rolling out. Well, they actually didn't announce they're rolling out anything. Somebody noticed on LinkedIn they opened up all these job recs for, like, job postings. I call them job recs because I'm cool, and that's what insiders call them. But on LinkedIn, there's all these job postings for people who do blockchain and blockchain experts. So it looks like Amazon is going to get go full steam into the blockchain business.
Yeah, two things that stood out to me reading this article. One is that I think it's smart of Amazon to be proactive about tackling ad fraud and kind of the data sensitivity. I think that they're doing a really good job learning from the mistakes of some of their competitors and, you know, trying to be smart about it. And I also think that they were wise not to make an announcement about this right now until they have it kind of more sorted out. But the other thing, there was a quote in the article that used the term trilemma, which I'd never seen before. Instead of dilemma, it's kind of that threefold balance between scalability, security, and decentralization is what it called out. And I think that that's going to be interesting for Amazon to tackle, just because they have done so much with scalability and decentralization in terms of like the operations side of the business. And I'm optimistic about what they might have to offer in the digital tech advertising sphere.
It's also smart they're focusing more on ad fraud, which most people get on board with, versus microtransactions and creating an actual coin. So it's all about blockchain and using, you know, the power of blockchain without introducing a new Amazon currency, which seems to really be the part that riles everybody up. So smart move by Amazon to get into blockchain as well. And of course, they can do microtransactions. I don't know if they'll create their own coin or use one of the 8 billion other coins out there, but I'm sure they will do both. So now we'll talk about Facebook.
Well, but first I want to mention, because this also goes back to Twitter, the article mentioned that growth on Amazon has been slowing. Like, they ramped up super quickly from the advertising side. And I wonder if this is also a move, you know, because they are focused on ad fraud, to kind of bump their appeal to advertisers and say like, hey, we can guarantee that, you know, the clicks that you're getting, the impressions that you're getting are legitimate. And we have a source that's going to provide that confirmation for you, that security.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is, blockchain's like all about that, you know. I'm forgetting the technical term for when they not acknowledge a transaction, but there's some word I can't remember. That's like the foundation of what blockchain does for you, where it like records the transaction and then you're like, this really happened. So instead of like old fashioned sending contracts back and forth and trying to like figure out some way to verify a transaction happened, like that's blockchain verifies the transaction on this, you know, ledger that everybody has access to in a way. So, and then you think about Amazon, well, you buy all your crap on Amazon, so they have the transaction. They can verify the transaction really happens. They know if the product got delivered or returned. I mean, they know a lot about the actual transaction. And then they can work backwards, where everybody else generally is doing the opposite, where they know a lot about the ad impression and they're trying to figure out, did it drive a transaction? Was a return? What's the profitability on that product? And there's a lot of data flying around, where Amazon's already got the gold, because that's where you're doing your transactions. Although actually credit card companies traditionally used to have the gold, because everybody used to want to connect with American Express and Visa to understand how people are buying. But now that's, even that has shifted to Amazon because people use all your cards on Amazon mm-hmm. or PayPal or anything. So Amazon has that data set, super valuable. Facebook. So there's some boring stuff and some not so boring stuff. We'll start with the boring stuff. Playable ads on Facebook, which I didn't even know what these were. Have you ever played a playable ad on Facebook?
Oh, I do my very best to avoid clicking on them. I've seen them quite a bit. That's like, here, download this game. And it gives you like a little preview. And I'm like, where can I, how can I exit out of this without accidentally like starting to play this game?
Yeah, it's genius. I do this like workout app in the morning. It's called like 30 Minute Abs or something ridiculous, Rock Hard Abs, I believe. I don't actually spend 30 minutes, and B, I do not have Rock Hard Abs, so I do not recommend this app. But it has, you know, like plays an ad after every workout. That's how they make their money. Mm. And it used to be videos pretty much nonstop. And then I've seen a lot of these playable ads now popping up where it's almost always a game. And it's basically some very easy way of like playing the first few parts of a game. And they're pretty effective. They look super spammy because a lot of times it's like spin the wheel to see if you, you know, get a whatever. But I'm seeing a lot more of them. So either I'm just getting targeted differently or people are starting to actually buy this inventory. Although maybe the latter, because Facebook is rolling out some changes where you can now preview the playable ad. And apparently you couldn't preview the CTA button before, and now you can actually like CTA, which is basically like the interactiveness of the ad. You can now get a full preview of that. So that's good if you're doing those. How about at Hennepin, you doing any gaming things?
We do have app campaigns for a handful of our clients, but I don't think that any right now specifically are like games. It's more of like news or audio or, you know.
Yeah, I feel like it's a hardcore vertical, gaming. Like you're either in gaming and then you're spending like a fortune trying to get people to do microtransactions and buy skins for their characters and all that stuff. And like it's a whole segment that I don't even, not that I don't know it, but I don't know it as well as I know like DR and brand, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, as more of a user expectation is shifting, like we're getting more used to video, to movements on the...
You're being attacked by your dog.
I know. So user expectation is shifting. Like we're more accustomed to seeing videos, GIFs, GIFs, whatever pool you're in there.
Yeah.
Like
don't
go think that having the sort of almost like a testimonial or like a demo of like what you're actually getting, that's going to be more and more prevalent if you are in the app download business of any kind, just being able to show that. So definitely worth looking at if you haven't played around with the playable ads. It seems like they're becoming a lot more user-friendly in terms of how to actually build it. But I agree, not really the most exciting headline.
Right. What kind of dog do you have, by the way?
He is an Australian Shepherd and Poodle mix.
Let's play guess the silly dog breed name. Australian Shepherd and a poodle. So it's like a shepoodle?
Almost. It's an Aussie doodle, which is what I usually say. And then people are like, what is that? So there you go.
I'm in the early consideration phase of getting a dog. So now that means everybody knows, like, you should get this dog. You should get that dog. And then the one was the King Charles and a poodle. So it was like a cavapoodle, King Charles Cavalier and a poodle. It's like a cavapoodle or something like that.
I've seen those. They're pretty cute.
Yeah, they're very cute. Okay, so if you hear a dog in the back, it's just the Ostradoodle.
Aussie doodle.
Aussie doodle. There you go. Okay, back to Facebook. So, before we get into Cambridge Analytica, I guess, you know, Zuck's been on the tour trying to talk about, hey, we're going to clean up Facebook, make it easier for you to control your privacy settings, which no one cares about, but at least give you the option. He called it a clear history option about a year ago, and they said they're going to take action on it. And they did now make some progress. They announced some new tools that will let you control how other websites share your data for ad targeting. And basically what this does is just break the connection between Facebook and these other third-party tools that you had given access to, or you didn't even give access to, like, intuitively. You just use Facebook to log in, or at some point you use Facebook and this website together, and they've now have you linked, and they might share data about you back and forth. So this is your ability to kind of stop doing that. And the one thing is, though, if you do that, that's great, but it doesn't delete any historical data. So if that third party already built a giant database on you and is, you know, serving you ads based on that, that won't go away. You'd have to, like, contact that person and invoke GDPR and say, I want to be forgotten, or whatever you have to do these days. But so that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, so that was an interesting little, I don't know, footnote, I guess, is that it doesn't delete the data, it just deletes the connection with your Facebook profile. And I think that that is really the distinction, because as I was reading it initially, I was like, wow, this is like a throwback, because I remember like 10 years ago when Facebook first came out with being able to link to third-party apps or websites. At that time, I didn't have a smartphone, so it was just websites. But you could, like, go in and say, like, I only want this to be able to see my friends, or I only want this to see my, you know, public information, or I don't want this to see anything. Like, please disconnect. And then it would just be like the next time that you logged into Spotify or whatever, it would reconnect that. So I think it's really, Facebook is still just struggling with the education piece, right? Like, people still aren't getting that this is a thing. There's like two camps, like people that are super oblivious to the fact that it's happening, and so nobody's really taking advantage of this, even though every time you log in, there's some kind of notice about, like, check your privacy settings. Or there's the people that, like, understand it thoroughly and are really upset and are like, hey, look, we need to fix this. So the article made it sound like Facebook is a lot more concerned with the PR focus than maybe what we might think of as, like, the quote unquote greater good. So right. It's a lot more about, you know, taking the feedback that they've gotten from users that are really concerned about it and figuring out a way to appease those concerns while still kind of keeping that, I don't know, the benefits that others who aren't concerned about privacy sharing or data sharing, keeping that intact so that they can continue to use Facebook with that convenience factor.
Yeah, they did point out, you know, if you do this, you won't see relevant ads anymore. You know, if you're using Facebook to log in, you'll have to, you know, log in differently. 'Cause that was Facebook's big technique back in the day, was they were, I think even before Google was doing it, like, aggressively, Facebook, mm-hmm. when they kind of approached the market two ways, because what they wanted to do is get as much data about as many users as possible. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what everybody was trying to do at the time. Google was trying to do it. Microsoft was trying to do it. And the way they did it was say, hey, if you want to put Facebook on your website page, so you could put, like, you know, a new post from Facebook, or you want to have somebody like your Facebook page from your website, you know, put this little piece of code and now Facebook's on your page. Well, great, if you add Facebook to your page, it means Facebook's also going to track that page. And then the other trick was, hey, you don't want to deal with people having to log into your website, signing up and all that crap. So just use our authentication product, Facebook Connect, I think it was called, and probably still is called. And then millions of websites used Facebook to log you in instead of building their own authentication process. And it was kind of a battle between Google and Facebook, like, who is going to log you in. And of course, once you're logged in, Facebook knows what you're looking at. So they've been, everybody, Google, Facebook, LinkedIn also has a version of this, Microsoft. So they've been doing this for a long time. And this is kind of one way to peel back a little bit of that, to say, hey, even though I'm linked with this website and I've been using it for a login, I want to unlink it. To your point, though, I thought you could do this already. I thought at some point you can find somewhere in Facebook a giant list of apps and just be like, unlink, 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 unlink. So it didn't feel like this was news, but apparently at some point that disappeared, and what they're calling off Facebook activity tool is rolling out. It's actually not in the U.S. right now. It's rolling out to South Korea, Spain, and Ireland, and then it will go to other countries. So, like you said, sounds more like PR than any, like, meaningful change. The other story from them, too, is, so I forget who leaked these emails. Oh, because in their case, or in Congress, or wherever they're investigating Facebook for Cambridge Analytica, they released a bunch of emails, a bunch of redacted emails, during the court proceeding or whatever's going on. And in those, there's folks that are talking about Cambridge Analytica before the story that broke about Cambridge Analytica, in which Zuckerberg and Facebook said, we didn't know about it. This is the first time hearing about it. You know, we'll take care of it. And now, according to these emails, like a week earlier, internally, they were saying, hey, Cambridge Analytica is super shady. What are they doing? We should look into it. So there's a bit of a news craze about, oh my God, it's a cover up. Facebook knew about Cambridge Analytica. So I don't know. I was very excited about this last week.
See, that's so interesting because I feel like I was kind of like, nah, doesn't surprise me. Like, of course, people knew about it before it came to light. Like, I was surprised with how many different people seemed to be engaging in the thread. Like, how did it not leak sooner than that? Like, how are that many people keeping this under wraps? I mean, I'm sure Facebook must have, like, really good, hiring processes that they filter for these trustworthy right. individuals. But I was actually impressed in that regard that they kept it under wraps for 2 months before it came out publicly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. I think it was 2 months. And, like, some of the things in the emails were, one employee said something like, a sketchy data modeling company has penetrated our market deeply on September 22nd. There's this whole email where it's like, hey, these guys are up to something. We need to figure it out. So the good news is, like, you do see the people at Facebook were like, hey, this company's shady. We should do something about it. So if I put my corporate hat on, they probably deal with, like, tons of shady partners. I mean, people on the internet do all kinds of terrible things.
Yeah.
This is probably one of many. And really, most of the email and the meetings that they were having at the time were kind of around scraping. And, hey, we think they're scraping our site. You know, they're not supposed to be. Is anybody, you know, somebody else was scraping. How do we deal with them? Can someone figure out what they're doing and why? So it seemed like a legitimate investigation into, like, why these people would be scraping the site. And if you don't know, scraping is, like, literally you write a bot that goes to a page and just copies all the information off of the page. And a lot of people used to do this and still do this to, like, Google search results. You, like, create a bot that, like, copies all the search results and then turns it to the second page, copies all the results, third page, and then they take all that data and they do something with it. Maybe they sell it to somebody as a competitive analysis tool when it really is just scraping the website. Mm-hmm. And it's very common, and it happens. If you have a website, somebody will scrape it to try to sell data somehow from it. So it's like a constant battle. Anyway, so that's really what they were talking about with Cambridge Analytica. And then according to some other stuff I was reading, it kind of came out that no, they weren't scraping because they didn't have to because they were an API partner. So all this stuff, because Facebook released this email to show that, hey, we knew about Cambridge Analytica, they were shady, but it was about scraping and look how good we were about investigating it. Although then it begs the question, like, and in your investigation, you didn't figure out that what they're doing is pretty terrible, but... Anyway,
yeah.
It felt very, like, lawsuit. I feel like I was on Law and Order when I was reading through these stories.
It also sounded like there was some disagreement about whether it was actually, like, against the terms and conditions. Like, if they were actually in compliance and it was just, like, still a super sketchy thing that they're doing. But kind of more on, like, the legal side of things, like... Is this something that we can take action against? Like, let's figure out what it really is so that we, you know, can respond accordingly. Because maybe they are within their, like, permissions right now and we should update our permissions, you know.
Very, very true. And then I have to ask you, since JD and I are on different sides of the privacy spectrum, he's like, not a prepper, but he's always like... I'm hiding. I don't want anybody to know anything. And I use Facebook login all the time. I just don't care. I'm lazy. Where do you fall on the privacy spectrum?
It has shifted. So I also made in my notes, this is actually for the Chrome one, but I wrote in my notes, Facebook has ruined cookies.
Right.
That, like you were saying, you know, 10 years ago when it first came out, it was like, oh, this is like the much safer way. Like instead of putting my email out there to, you know, 30, 40, 50 different websites, I'll just use Facebook. And then it's like all centralized and Facebook is protecting my information. And now it's like, Like, I won't contribute to, like, birthday fundraisers on Facebook because I'm like, I don't want to give Facebook my credit card number. So I've kind of done a 180.
Okay, you're on the JD side for sure, because I just did a birthday fundraiser yesterday. Not for me. For somebody else's, although my birthday is coming up. And my girlfriend's like, you should do one too. And I'm like,
Well, happy advanced birthday. I won't be donating to your cause. I did actually once... One of my best friends had a birthday fundraiser, and I just went to the nonprofit directly and, like, donated in his name, and I sent him, like, the thank you card. And he's like, can I ask why you did this? And I had to explain my paranoia about giving my financial information to Facebook.
Okay, you are definitely in the JD camp. You're getting the bunker ready, and Facebook's coming to take your data.
Interestingly, Facebook is the only one that I really feel that way about. Like, I'm not... paranoid about Amazon or Google or PayPal.
Yeah, it's funny that Facebook has such a PR problem, like, because they all kind of do the same thing. And obviously Facebook's had a lot of privacy leaks and a lot of, like, just boneheaded moves where they do stuff that just doesn't pass the common sense test. But if you dig deep enough, I'm sure you'd find all those things that Amazon, maybe not Apple, Apple, and, you know, they're really making this their one of the focuses of their new marketing is about security and privacy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe let's talk about that Chrome article because it plays right into this. So Chrome announced, so let me step back. A lot of the browsers lately are coming up with these new secure versions or privacy protection versions that are trying to limit the ability of cookies to be set on your machine. And even some, I just saw, I don't know if it's Braze or maybe not Safari, maybe. Maybe Safari, one of them, was going to try to strip UTM parameters out as well. So if it has a URL, it's going to get rid of all those UTMs and tracking params, which as a marketer just scares the poop out of me because pixels, we already know, like, you know, there's incognito and there's all these reasons it doesn't work. But you always feel like you can trust the params at the end of the day. So browsers are getting very creative to try to protect people's privacy, which is great. And on the flip side, then, a lot of brands came out and said, hey, we know you hate the pixel, but that's how we make money. So if there is no pixeled user, I can't use retargeting. I can't target ads appropriately. You end up with crappy ads. You don't click on them. I don't make any money. So, you know, the brands were saying, hey, you know, we're really going to lose a lot of money if we can't use these basic kind of tools. And there's been two conflicting reports. So one report by the kind of pro-privacy folks came out and said, hey, if you get rid of all this cookie stuff, it only decreases ad revenue by 4%. That showed only a 4% ad revenue increase. Yes, for cookies. I got that right. The one Google just put out, so this article comes from Google, who claimed that publisher revenue dropped by 52% when looking at impressions without cookies. So, and then specifically news publishers saw a 62% revenue decline. So Google's really trying to be like, hey, we can't do the internet without cookies because, you know, ads are so important to these publishers. So let Chrome come out with a nice version that will, like, protect privacy, but let programmatic display still work. And obviously some people don't trust that Chrome is actually thinking in the best interest of folks. But
yeah, and I think it comes back to, again, just the education piece of, like, all those Safari users, like, that are using Safari because it's the default, like, web browser on their device. Like, how are you going to get those people to switch over to Chrome because it's going to be better for everybody? And I think it's so interesting because of the way that Google is structured. You know, like, they have all these different sources of revenue, but it's also, like, for the publisher, that's how they make money. Like, websites that are specifically built just to show ads and get web visits, like, if you can't track that, then your whole revenue source is just going to decay and fall away. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how it proceeds and if Google's going to get more aggressive in terms of, like, marketing Chrome and getting people to switch over more so than they already do.
It also shows, in the public sphere, some people are talking about breaking up Google, Facebook, Apple, their monopolies. So part of the Democratic debates, it's come up a bunch. And it's been, you know, in a few kind of national papers and whatnot. So And this really makes you realize maybe that's a good idea, because the same person who owns the ad business is the one who owns the browser, and in many cases, the one who owns the software you use to run your business, and the one who...
And the search results that are sending people to your site.
Right, which is, you know, on your phone, which is built by them, with the operating system that was built by them, using the map that was built by them. So it is one of those things where they just have so much control because they're so pervasive that they can do this. They could say, yeah, we're going to build privacy, but let this group of people kind of break the rules because we basically need the ads to be more effective, because that's where, like, 95, I should look it up when they do their next financials. All Google's revenue comes from ads. They have all this other crap they do with Google Analytics 360 and Google Apps. And at the end of the day, it's like peanuts compared to the billions that they make on ads. So for them, every single thing they do needs to either create more inventory to serve ads, provide more data so that their ads are more effective, or get you to buy more advertising as an advertiser. Everything else for them is kind of a waste of time, because they just make so much money for every advertising dollar that flows through their system that, like, all the other stuff doesn't make too much sense. It's part of the reason why they built Alphabet as a parent company and started breaking up the companies, probably because some of these are like, and then they start shuttering some. But anyway, I digress. I brought this up because Apple is saying on the other side, hey, we understand all that. We don't care. We're going to block everything anyway, and there will be some impacts that are quote-unquote negative. In fact, Apple listed 11 business practices like measuring ad effectiveness, preventing fraud and bot traffic, analytics that may break when you get rid of cookie tracking. So we focus on like ad tracking, but yeah, one of the ways you can prevent fraud and bots is by using cookies as well. So there are some serious downsides to going to like a cookie-less browser experience. But
and all the benefits that like initially were the benefits of cookies, like the delicious cookies before got like salt poured all over it. But like not having to put in your password every time you go to a website, like I love having my password saved. I shouldn't say that on the air, but it's so convenient. And it's so frustrating when I have to like, oh man, now I have to remember what password I set up for this site that I only used once every other year.
Right. Yeah, cookies were very useful. That's why I think, you know, they were a good vehicle for all the tracking that they do. All right, let's hit a few more stories. So we have some more Google. You're much more of a search nerd than I am, so you should talk about maximized conversion value.
Cool. So, yeah, we have two actual, like, kind of tactical announcements from Google. So the first is the maximized conversion value smart bidding strategy that has officially rolled out. It was announced back in May at the Google Marketing Live, so it's more of just fulfillment of what they promised. But if you've looked at or experimented with the maximized conversions bidding strategy, it's going to be basically the same thing, except for the algorithms are going to target your conversion value or your revenue as the KPI to maximize with your ad delivery and how it chooses the bidding and all of those things. So really cool. It will spend your budget, whatever budget you set. So I think we've talked about this a lot with the maximized conversions strategy of like, it's if you have a budget that's set too high, it's just going to give you like $300 CPCs or something crazy. So make sure that you're setting that. It's best to test, honestly, in campaigns that are already limited by budget, because the data there is kind of used to having that budget limit. And so it'll optimize within that restriction. And then the other note that I always like to mention whenever smart bidding comes up is that it's not magic. It's just machine learning. So make sure that the data that is feeding into it is the data that you want to optimize towards. So one example to be careful of, you know, because it's tracking revenue, you're hopefully not going to have as much of a concern here. But there are instances of like if you have calls from ads or app downloads that are just set to like a default value of like $1. Google might see that and be like, oh, we're getting a dollar in revenue for every call that comes in or every app that's downloaded. So let's really try to get as much of that as we can. And in reality, that may not be bringing any revenue for your business. So just something to be really careful of if you are including any of those alternate conversion types in your conversions column. But I'm really excited to test this out, honestly. I think it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's, you know, it does remind me of at AdStage once we, so to your point, when people set up Google Analytics goals, a lot of times they set up default values or it's like, you know, set $10 because then you can get a general sense of a CPA, or you ask the team, well, how much is a demo worth to you? And somehow they figure out $50. And at the moment you do that, it's like, okay, that makes sense. We'll just use this as a rough understanding, and you build some nice, you know, customer acquisition cost models, and maybe you're looking at return on ad spend and all that fun stuff, but it's like kind of known that this isn't like the real dollars and cents. And then if you switch to this and you're using Google Analytics goals as your conversions, and suddenly you're like, whoa, let's spend all that money on that $50 demo, which if you don't take the time to go as an agency, especially talk to your client, make sure that they have buy-in, that that's like a real $50 value, not just something that they threw into Google Analytics when they were setting it up, which like 80% of the time is the case because they set it up like 5 years ago when nobody cared about any of these metrics in Google. So I think that's a great point. Like, don't try this unless you're absolutely sure the revenue in your system is real. Otherwise, you could really be optimizing for the wrong thing.
Yep. And then the second update is that Google is going to be sunsetting the accelerated delivery option as of October 1st. So I was surprised to see on Twitter that there were quite a few advertisers actually still using the accelerated delivery.
And yeah, me too.
If you're into that, then that's great. But unfortunately, you are going to have to get everything you can out of it in the next 35 days or so. There's not going to really be any replacement. My biggest takeaway from just kind of ruminating on this update is that I think Google is really doing all they can to gradually push us towards trusting the machines. And like, just there's doesn't need to be a difference between standard delivery and accelerated delivery. Like, if you want your ads to show up 100% of the time or as much as possible, then use something like target impression share bidding. Or if you only want your ads to show during the first part of the day, use day parting or ad schedules. That, you know, they're just trying to kind of show advertisers that you don't necessarily need that setting anymore.
Right. Yeah, I actually just saw, we didn't include the story here, but Facebook, someone on Twitter had one of Facebook's recommendations, when you go to pause an ad set, it's like, are you sure you want to pause this? Because we predict your, you know, cost per conversion or whatever metric is going to go down in the next like day. So maybe you should leave this running. It's so similar to Google, obviously trying to get you to move more and more of your decision making into the machine. Facebook just, you know, finding you making a manual change, like, are you sure you want to touch the machine? I was like in my mind picturing this whole cartoon series of like Facebook like stopping you from doing everything in your account because they just want you to just leave it alone and let it run. And every time you try to like pause something or lower a bid or lower a budget, it's like, are you sure you want to do this? And then soon, you know, it'll just be like, are you sure you don't want to go watch one more episode of Game of Thrones on Netflix and just distract you away from it because it's like, you don't need us anymore, Facebook and Google. The machines are coming for us.
Like a sales tactic to me, though. Like, are you sure you want to stop running this? We can get you a better deal on these conversions. Like,
yeah.
Why wasn't I getting that CPA today? You know, but of course.
It's very complicated. You know, the algorithm knows that the next, which is, it for some reason, that pop-up really made me feel like the machine was talking to me, saying like, hey, I see you, human, doing this thing, and it's really not so smart. And that's why I just kept thinking it was going to try to distract me rather than like explain why CPA is going to go down or up, because conversions usually come at the end of the day. So you'll probably get two more. So if you're reacting to that, instead, it's just going to really like try to get me to watch Netflix, because that's the best way to like distract me from pausing. The
yeah.
It just knows me.
Like, you know, I'm so glad that that's in advertising and not in like the self-driving cars, that it's not like, are you, do you want to slow down a little bit? Are you sure you don't want to slow down a little bit? You're coming up really fast in this car in front of you. It's just like, no, you're going to slow down.
Yeah. You sure you want to go to your grandmother's house today? Let's start commenting on like your decision making in life is the next step for self-driving. All right, last story. I forgot to mention we're talking about privacy with all that Chrome stuff, because there was another big headline that turned out to be a little bit of a oversell. In Adweek, they announced that Google cut off Adobe DSP from the Ad Exchange. Well, only in Europe did they do that. So, you know, Google or Adobe buys inventory from Google. So if you use Adobe's DSP, I don't know what it's called, Adobe Advertising Cloud, in Europe, you can't buy the Google inventory right now. And Google said that Adobe's DSP was implicated in a recent malvertising attack, malware and advertising, malvertising. So then they kind of booted them in the short term while they fix it. And then they'll probably address it and get back on. I don't think it's really, they're not off for good. Adobe and Google are not at war. So, but going back to privacy and ad fraud, etc., Google did do a little something to hold Adobe accountable.
Yep, and I think the other thing of note is that it says the Americas and APAC are not affected. It's just specifically the European market with the GDPR concerns and things like that. So don't fret if you're a U.S. advertiser in the Americas or in Asia. You're probably still fine, but go check out that headline if it's something that's concerning for you.
And you reminded me, I owe the podcast listeners a roundup of the Spotify ads that we ran. So we ran ads for this very podcast because we were testing out Spotify as a network. It was very easy to use, and it's a commercial for Spotify, I guess, but built a quick campaign, ad approved in like 24 hours. Well, it got disapproved because we broke the rules, but then once we fixed if you're promoting audio content, which we were promoting the podcast, you must link to Spotify. So if you're going to do a Spotify
ad,
link
offsite to the...
Yeah. But if you're doing a brand or basically anything other than audio, you could link to your landing page. But you can't if you're doing audio content. And for our test, we did. And we spent like $250. And I forgot. I'll bring the numbers to another podcast. But it was a good little test. And reporting's pretty good. And it was really looks like they focused on the right things and like building a nice quick ads interface that kind of does everything you expect. Although they don't have a conversion pixel. So promoting the audio content's great because in Spotify, you can see all kinds of data about, you know, Spotify. But if we were sending it to offsite, you know, I had UTMs baked into my landing page when I thought I could do one, and then they rejected it, but no conversion tracking yet. So that's the big ask there. So that's my Spotify update.
I agree with that. My biggest complaint is just not having the pixel. I think it's great if you have like really broad like service or events that you want to target. So we did like a little bit with geo-targeting. My other complaint is that they don't have a lot of like user targeting. It's just like for podcasts, like people that listen to audio or soundtracks. But it's really straightforward. I love that you can give them a script and they'll literally record an ad for you. That is
huge. Of course, we did not do that because we
have
excellent voice talent.
But for those that don't have such great voice talent, like Paul, you can call up Paul and have him record your ad or do
side
it
hustle.
Spotify.
DM me. Yeah, it is great they record it for you if you just send a script. And they did. I don't know the last time you ran a Spotify campaign. 3 weeks ago, I think they launched like genre targeting. And one of the other ones they have in there is new. So you could do like interest, genre, or category or something like that. One of them is like
Nice.
The channel. You know, the channel's like studying or dancing or partying or whatever. You could do those. I think you'd always do those. But now you can also do like interested in business and interested in technology. So, and then there was some demo targeting too. So we did like age group, geo, interested in tech, listens to podcasts. It felt like, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Pretty good crowd.
The last that I ran was, I think, in January. And it was still just like demographic and like genre targeting.
Right. They like electronic music. That was I remember looking at it before, and I was like, well, I don't really know what kind of music our audience likes, so that's going to be tough for me. Great. Well, those are all the headlines we have this week. If you want more headlines in your inbox, you can head over to blog.antstage.io and sign up for the newsletter. And I want to thank you again, Emma, for hopping on and chatting with us. People can find you on Twitter, right? You're like Emma something something?
Yes, on Twitter it's AKA Emma Louise. And if you want to learn more about Hannepin Marketing, it's just hannepinmarketing.com. Hannepin is H-A-N-A-P-I-N.
And Hannepin are the folks that bring you Hero Conference, right?
Yes, and the PPC Hero blog.
That's the other name I was trying to think of, PPC Hero, which everybody in paid search and social should read. We get a ton of our stories from there. So if you don't know PPC Hero, or it's sometimes people call it PPC Chero, you can head over to PPC Hero, check them out, sign up, and you can learn all kinds of fun stuff about the PPC industry. Thank you again, Emma, and enjoy your week, everybody.
Thank you.